KFI Los Angeles. For correct time all the time, wear a Bulova. Trade in your old watch. Get a liberal allowance toward a new Bulova. Any Bulova you choose.
Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. The makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment brought to you by the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood, with the regular Good News cast of entertainers, plus tonight's guest star, Robert Montgomery. And here is your host for this evening, Robert Dude Ranch Young.
Thank you, Warren, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The explanation of that Dude Ranch nickname Warren just hung on me is this. After many, many months of toil and a good deal of dickering with the FHA, the government and I have acquired title to a little ranch in the San Fernando Valley. And I'm happy to say that among us...
Excuse me, Bob.
Yes, Meredith?
Did you say you have an FHA ranch?
Yes, Meredith, I did.
FHA, for ham actors.
That's awfully good. You got that from a magazine?
No, my barber told it to me.
And you've been saving it all these months.
I'm sorry, Bob. I really think your ranch is a great idea. I even got you a present for your ranch warming.
Well, that's very nice, Meredith, but suppose we let that go for a while and you get the program started. Have you something Irish?
Biggest Irish number in the world.
Well, what is it?
Hooray for spinach.
Spinach?
Green, ain't it?
Well, it's pop Irish. Oh, go ahead and play it. Say it's spinach. And now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we have as a special guest...
M-O-R-R-I-G-A-N spells Morrigan. I'm proud of all the Irish blood that's in me. Even a man can say a word again me.
M-O-R-R-I-G-A-N.
What?
Morrigan?
Yeah, the top of the evening to you me by, and it's a grand day we'll be having tomorrow, with the bands are playing and the shamrocks are flying, and the boys are marching down the street with
Frank.
Another... What?
Why are you changing the words of that fine old song? The name of it is Harrigan.
Well, this song was originally Morrigan in the honor of my ancestors from the County Cork, where I drew my first breath. Saints be praised.
Where'd you draw your first cork?
At the Lambs Club. What's that got to do with it?
Well, I just wondered.
Now, don't start making trouble today, young. I came in here feeling at peace with the whole world. In fact, I felt like singing, so don't spoil everything.
I don't want to spoil anything. So you want to sing? Well, let's all sing.
Oh, fine. Come on, Meredith.
Come here, Warren.
Okay.
All right, fellas, what do we sing?
Well, let's sing Morrigan with the new lyric, Harrigan.
Be jabers, and it's a fine song. Here we go.
Hey! H-A-R-R-I-G-A-N spelled Harrigan. Proud of all the Irish blood that's in me. Give it a man to say a word again me. H-A-R-R-I-G-A-N, you see. It's a name that a shame never has been connected with Harrigan. That's me.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here is Fanny Bryce as Baby Snook. Many things have happened since Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, took Snooks to San Francisco to see the World's Fair. But now they are finally ready to look it over. As the scene opens, they are at the turnstiles ready to begin the tour of Treasure Island. Listen.
Is this the World's Fair, Daddy?
Yes, this place is called Treasure Island.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I guess they got the idea from Stevenson's book.
Who's he?
Robert Louis Stevenson.
Uncle Louis?
No, not Uncle Louis. Robert Louis Stevenson. He wrote a book called Treasure Island about pirates and Long John Silver and the notorious blind beggar, Pew.
Huh?
Pew.
You smell something, Daddy?
Oh, come on. Let's walk up the gateway.
All right, Daddy.
Oh, there's Ripley's Auditorium. And over there is the snake show.
I want to see some of the snakes, Daddy.
Well, later. Just look at the pictures now.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the length of that tremendous python.
Mm.
30 feet.
I don't see his feet, Daddy.
He hasn't got any feet. He's 30 feet long. You realize how many inches that is?
Mm-hmm. 1674.
Oh, no. Snooks, don't you know your table of measurements?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what makes a foot?
1 foot is a foot, and a whole lot of foot is a feet.
No. There are 12 inches in a foot. Now, turn around. See that great big statue?
Mm-hmm.
That's Specifica, the famous statue of the fair. Well, she's 80 feet tall, her hands measure 3 feet each, and every tooth in her mouth is a foot.
She's got feet in her mouth?
No, she hasn't got feet in her mouth. I'm talking about her teeth.
Does her teeth hurt her?
No.
Then why does she put her feet in her mouth?
She hasn't got her feet in her mouth.
Why?
Oh, I'll explain it to you some other time. Keep walking.
Oh, what's that big place, Daddy?
Where?
Where all the men is looking through the glass.
Oh, boy. There it is.
Huh?
Nothing.
N-U-D-E.
Never mind that. Come on, look at the elephant. Hey, Snook. How'd you like to take a ride by yourself on the roller coaster?
Hmm? Why?
Well, look. Now, while you're taking a ride, I'll go and, I have to mail a letter.
I want to go with you.
Well, you can't go with me.
Why?
Because, oh, forget it. I guess I'll have to mail that letter some other time.
Go mail it, Daddy. I won't tell Mommy.
Tell Mommy what?
Ranch.
Look, I don't want to go to any nude ranch. What gave you that idea?
I know.
What a kid. Serves me right for marrying a policewoman. Come on. Let's see the rest of the fair.
I want to go swimming, Daddy.
You can't swim there. That's the Lake of All Nations.
When chickens are swimming.
Oh, they're not chickens. They're swans.
I want one.
Now, don't be silly. You can't have a swan.
Why?
Because they're only to look at. See how graceful they are? Look at that gorgeous plumage.
Plumage? What plumage, Daddy?
White feathers. Down. The swan's whole coat is down.
Is his pants down, too?
Now, stop that nonsense.
What's that big house, Daddy?
That's the Australian building. You want to see it?
Mm-hmm. Daddy.
Now, what is it?
Is that where Uncle Joe went to get married?
Uh-huh, yes. Uncle Joe married a native of Australia.
Native?
That's your Aunt Tessie.
Mm-hmm.
You've never seen her, only her pictures.
Is she in here, Daddy?
Of course not. They just have a lot of things brought here from Australia. Isn't it a wonderful building?
Mm-hmm.
What are you laughing at?
There's Aunt Tessie.
Aunt Tessie? That's a kangaroo.
It looks like Aunt Tessie.
Well, it isn't. And you mustn't say those things.
Why?
Well, how would your little cousin Mervyn feel if he heard you compare his mother to a kangaroo?
I'll ask him, Daddy.
You'll ask him? Mervyn's in Australia.
No, he ain't. He's right there.
Where?
Peeping his head out of Aunt Tessie's pocket.
That's the kangaroo's baby. She keeps it in her pouch. Now, come away from there. You'll get hurt.
All right. Daddy.
What is it now?
Look at all the little girls.
Oh, yes. That's a troop of Girl Scouts.
What are you doing here?
I don't know. Oh, I guess they're celebrating the birthday of the organization. I read something about it in the papers.
Read what, Daddy?
They're 27 years old.
Those little girls?
No, the organization. When you get a little older, I want you to join the Girl Scouts.
Why?
Because it will help you to grow into a fine woman. When I was a youngster, I was a scout.
A Girl Scout?
Of course not. I was a Boy Scout. Come on, let's get a look at the rest of the fair.
What are the Girl Scouts going, Daddy?
They're going into the Chinese building. See the quaint Oriental architecture? They were masters at it.
Who?
The Chinese. You know, it's incredible how they managed to live. The population is so great. What an amazing race.
When does it start, Daddy?
When does what start?
The race.
There isn't any race. I'm talking about the Chinese population. You know that every time you draw breath, a Chinese baby is born.
Is it?
Yes. Now, across the way is the Brazilian building. Now, those people there come from South Africa. Snooks! Snooks, what are you doing?
I'm making Chinese babies, Daddy.
Oh!
Say, Bob, if I may, I'd like a few words with the ladies this evening.
Of course, Warren. What will it be?
Well, ladies, have you ever passed a shop window and seen drapes or fabrics whose colors had faded? You wouldn't buy faded fabrics, would you? No, I'm sure you wouldn't. No woman would spend her money that way. She wouldn't be getting her money's worth. And yet, isn't the very same thing true when you buy coffee whose flavor has faded? Flavor that you had counted on and paid to enjoy. You see, air steals away coffee flavor. And all coffee, whether ground or in the whole bean, starts to lose flavor as soon as it's roasted, if exposed to the air. In fact, ground coffee, packed in ordinary containers where the air can get at it, loses as much as 45%, nearly half, its flavor in only 9 days. But with Maxwell House, the coffee is taken still fresh and fragrant from the roasting oven and packed in the familiar blue super vacuum can. No air can get in, no flavor can get out. Maxwell House comes right into your kitchen with all its wonderful flavor and fragrance sealed in, none wasted. And to make sure you get all the extra richness and goodness of this superb coffee, check your proportions carefully. If you're not sure of the correct amount of coffee and water to use, look at the clear, easy-to-follow directions printed on the can. These directions are correct for making Maxwell House coffee. By following them, you're sure of getting the full flavor and goodness of Maxwell House in the most economical way. So treat yourself to a pound of the new Maxwell House tomorrow, won't you? Remember, with Maxwell House, you're sure of getting coffee that's not just days fresh, but roaster fresh. And no coffee can be fresher than that.
Now the ingenue of the Good News program, Gertrude Neeson. Tonight, Gertrude sings as her first number one of the greatest love songs ever written by the great George Gershwin. You all know it, The Man I Love. Thank you, Richard.
maybe Monday, maybe not. Still, I'm sure to meet him one day. Maybe Tuesday will be my good news day. He'll build a little home, just meant for two.
Fine, Gertrude.
Oh, hello, Gertrude.
Oh, hello, Ticklish.
Still not here.
Ticklish? That's a cute name for you, Frankie Wanky.
There's the time and place for everything.
Yeah.
Gertrude, weren't you at the Victor Hugo Sunday night?
Why, Ticklish, we were there together.
I thought I saw you there. weren't you the girl with the checked dress?
No, I wore mine.
Oh, you wore it. Yes, well, I guess that'll take me.
We still have a date for Saturday, haven't we?
Oh, wait a minute, Gertrude. I thought you were coming to my housewarming on Saturday.
Oh, of course. I wouldn't miss it for the world. The date's off, Stickless.
That girl's got discretion is not her most prominent feature.
No. Frank, you're coming to the housewarming, aren't you?
Well, I'm terribly sorry, Bob, but I have other plans. An old college chum is coming through town. One of those obligations, you know. He's a rather dull fellow. Last man in the world you'd expect to be manager of a girls' orchestra. But I've got to see him. I can't figure any way to get out of it.
Well, how do you know he'll have the girls with him?
Well, if he doesn't, what are you talking about?
Now, listen, Frank, you've simply got to come on Saturday. That's all there is to it.
Well, I can't come, Bob. I'm awfully sorry, but I've got a little present for you and your wife for the house.
Oh,
it's a painting, and it's such a superb work of art that people will come across the ocean to see it. Your home will become a mecca for art lovers. You yourself will be famous as a connoisseur and patron of the art. What a picture!
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, took me half an hour to paint it.
Hmm?
How do you like it, Bob?
Well, that took you half an hour, huh?
Yes, well, it's
restful, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think so, in a fatiguing sort of a way.
But, Frank, what's it supposed to be? A peppermint stick?
Oh, there are none so blind as those who will not see. What a time we artists have trying to transmit our visions to the public. They threw stones at Gauguin when they saw his lovely pictures of the South Seas. They laughed at Gainsborough's famous painting of the Blue Boy. They jeered at Whistler's mother.
What was she painting?
Oh. I'm surrounded by barbarian dolts. Give me back my masterpiece. I'm ever a masterpiece.
Well, you can call it a masterpiece if you like, Frank, but I can't make head or tail of it. What is it?
Yeah, what is it, Frank?
Oh, fools, can't you see? This picture is a remarkable study of a barber shop on the Lower East Side of New York. The minute I saw the place, I felt an urge to paint it. I never saw a shop with so much character.
Well, I can't see any barber shop. All you've got there is a lot of red and white stripes.
Well, I was sitting behind the barber pole when I painted it.
Well,
this picture's just too good for you, young. I wouldn't give it to you now if you asked me on your bended knees. You can go, young man. It's no.
Gee, what are you going to do with the darn thing, Frank?
Darn thing? I'm going to give it to the Louvre. Why shouldn't the work of Paris' favorite son return to the greatest museum in France?
Oh, what is this? Yes. What are you trying to give off? That you were a painter in Paris, Morgan?
Rembrandt Morgan, monsieur. Acknowledged by art critics the world over as the greatest draftsman since Leonardo, the finest master of color since Rubens, unsurpassed with charcoal.
How were you with the brushes?
Best man Fuller ever had. Oh! There you go, interrupting my train of thought.
No magazine sold after the train leaves the depot.
Cut it out, Bob. I want to hear about Frank's painting.
You do?
Yes, I'm interested in art. When I was a kid, I was a whiz with the transfers. You know, back of your hand.
Transfer pictures. Why do I have to stand here and be heckled by 5 feet 10 inches of provincial ignorance?
6 foot 1.
If El Greco could see me now... Here I stand, a blood brother to the great Gauguin. Morgan, the greatest realistic painter of the 20th century. Why, I once took a bare brick wall in Paris and painted a tree on it that was so real the city had to send a man to take it away.
What for?
Well, the sparrows were beating their brains out trying to nest in it.
What a lark.
Lark. Gee, isn't he swift?
Well, you needn't crow. Oh, you got me to it.
Well, get back to Paris, Rembrandt. When did you start painting?
Well, I was lucky, Bob. As soon as I arrived in Paris, my boyish charm and my natural good looks and witty conversation made me the darling of the city.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I was so charming, I soon came to be a familiar figure in every saloon in Paris. Salon.
Still no painting, Rembrandt.
Well, I'm coming to that, Bob. During my second week, I was commissioned to paint a portrait of the lovely Comtesse de la Brossière. And I put my heart and soul into the work. I turned out a brilliant picture. I caught her personality perfectly with my amazing style.
Amazing style?
Yes. Before the portrait was even completed, she fell madly in love with me.
Gee, what kind of technique did you use, Frank?
Well, I started by telling her I was lonesome, and the first thing you knew, my painting technique. Well, my method is to use contrasting colors.
What's that?
Well, a few drops of burnt sienna, a little umber, a touch of ochre.
And a dash of Angostura.
Shake well and serve in 10-ounce glass.
What? Say, Frank, I don't understand this.
I don't either. This fellow's distracting me again.
Well, what happened to the Countess?
Well, I'd rather not discuss it. It was one of those silly... Suffice it to say that after that first commission, things broke badly for me.
Well, it serves you right. I'll bet you made overtures to all your models.
I resent that, young. I had 3 models on my very next picture, and I never even kissed them.
Who were they?
An apple and 2 bananas. It was a brilliant still life, but I couldn't sell it. The dealers of Paris conspired against me, and I became an outcast.
Yeah?
I almost starved to death. Twice I was on the verge of throwing myself into the Seine.
Once would have been enough, Frank.
I... You should see him imitate baby snooks at a party. Shall I continue?
Well, please do, Frank. What happened?
Well, at my darkest hour, I learned of a contest with a prize of 10,000 francs for the finest oil painting. But sacré bleu, the contest was to close at 12 that very night.
Well, that's a tough situation.
It was indeed. I dashed to my studio, and then came the real agony.
What now, Frank?
Well, I had no inspiration. I stared at the blank canvas before me, palette in hand. Ideas were rushing madly past, each one more hopeless than the last. The shades of night were falling fast.
Excelsior! Trapped again.
Oh, never mind, Frank. Did you get an inspiration?
Yes, but it was too good for a mere contest.
Oh, you got an idea for a masterpiece.
Of course. I dashed it off, sold it to the Louvre, and my work is hanging there to this day.
Well, what's the picture?
Well, it's a sign. It says this way to the exit, and that's where I'm going now. So long.
Warren, once again we gather with all our friends in our usual Thursday evening custom. Here's Gertrude Neeson.
Hello, boys. I thought I detected the fragrance of freshly brewed coffee.
You sure did. And you're just in time to join all our friends in a moment of relaxation over a steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House coffee. Pull up your chair, Gertrude. Here's a cup of Maxwell House for you. Here's sugar and cream. And here's Meredith Wilson's music. We pause briefly for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles.
We continue our Maxwell House Good News program with the Meredith Wilson Project. The other day, Meredith embarked on the ambitious project of writing an opera based on a popular American theme. When he had it finished, he asked Melissa Cordes if she would sing the soprano role. But after looking at the score, she declined. Since then, the singing parts of Meredith's opera have been refused by practically every legitimate singer in Hollywood. But Meredith is a man with plenty of determination. So he is presenting it tonight for the first time on the air with himself as the leading tenor, the leading soprano, the leading baritone, and in one passage, he will accompany himself on the flute. Ladies and gentlemen, the world premiere of Meredith Wilson's first opera based on a theme you all know. Enters and sings a song of love underneath the prima donna's balcony.
Creepers, creepers, where did you get those peepers? Creepers, creepers. You get those.
The prima donna sees him.
Jeepers. La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la.
He embraces her, and not knowing what else to do, they walk. While they are waltzing, the husband enters.
Jeepers.
She dies.
Jeepers.
He dies.
Jeepers.
Oh, they all die. The curtain slowly descends. Opera. But after all, tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day, and I'm happy to say that we're going to honor the great day in a very unusual way. My good friend Robert Montgomery will appear in a short Irish play especially written for this program, and I'm sure he can tell you about it much more eloquently than I. So here he is, Bob Montgomery.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. The play we're going to do for you in just a moment is called Fate is Not Always a Lady, which is certainly an Irish notion. It was written by two young men named Hartman Renault and Sidney Cook, and to my mind, it's one of the most beautifully written plays I've ever read. In our cast, you will hear Mr. J.M. Carrigan as Sean Feeney, Mr. Wright Kramer as Time, and Miss Elizabeth Risden as Fate, who, as you'll soon see, is not always a lady. The story begins on a lonely country road in Ireland, a road somewhere near Dublin. It is late at night. It's raining, and the wind blowing eerily through the trees suggests the sound of ghostly voices. The low rumble of distant thunder is heard occasionally, but it doesn't appear to worry two travelers trudging along against the wind.
Well, stop a minute now till I light me pipe.
You can light a match in this wind, Sean Feeney. You're fair good. I'll stand here to shield you.
Well, I'd be a poor thing if I couldn't light a pipe in a bit of a breeze like this. And me tramping the roads these 30 years. What did you say your name is, lad?
Michael Brady.
County Cork, from the Brogue here.
Aye, from Kinsale on the River Bandon.
Well, you've come a long way, lad, and seen the Green Isle in all her spring beauty.
Beauty enough, Sean. But you can't eat it, I'm thinking. Things being the way they are, there's no chance for a good and strong man to get a decent living. So it's off to the States I am, like I said.
To the States, is it? Well, it's a fair start of a country from all I'm hearing. But it's not Ireland.
And glad I'll be for that.
Ah, but Michael, will you know? I wonder.
Save your wonder. My mind's made up. And when Michael Brady makes up his mind, the devil himself can't change it.
And yet it's a fine country, Ireland. And it's happy I've been, rambling the length and breadth over these many years. Loving the beauty of her. Listening to the songs of her. Loving her children, too. God pity them. For they're the dearest fools in all the wide world.
Fools it is. Or we wouldn't be chased about all these years like spineless weasels.
Well, it is a fiery lad you are, no doubt. You know, coming over the scruff of the hill now, I was thinking about Ireland. Thinking it was a wise and true thing to be calling her a woman. Thinking that, like all women, she's had terrible suffering to put on her. And she's all the nobler for it. Thinking that once she gets into your blood, well, there's no forgetting her.
Is it a daft poet you are? Raving about Ireland in the midst of a pitch-black rainy night?
Well, you can take your pick.
Well, whatever it is, you cannot be winning me from my purpose with all your fine talk.
They do be saying there's very few jobs in America,
though. Sure, any man will be glad to have me work with me great strength. I'm for stopping here now and making a bed of it. My feet are fair to burning.
No, we'll not be stopping hereabouts, Michael. A few miles down the road, there's a decent widow woman. She has only a shack over her head, but she has a kind heart. We'll sleep in the lean-to near the cattle. It'll be warmer there.
It's a queer thing, come to think of it, me being here. Trudging the road with a stranger instead of snug in my cousin's house in Dublin, where I started for this day.
And all because of a broken bridge.
And not another within 10 miles bad cess to it. If I'd not stopped at the inn for that last mug of ale and listened to your spoutings, I'd been across the bridge before it fell.
Or maybe in the middle of it.
'Twas a near thing, surely. And me with one foot on the planking. Not that I couldn't have swum ashore, mind you, if I'd gone into the stream.
Did you ever stop to think now, Michael, how the little things to be always changing our lives? I mind I had a girl once, God rest her soul, fair gone I was, and I'd have married her too, only she had a wart on her nose.
Divil, take her wart and your blather too. It's destroyed I am with the rain sogging in me shoes. I'm beginning to think the old lady was right.
The old lady?
Aye, me grandmother.
How is she right?
She's a queer one, surely. As superstitious as an old witch telling fortunes at a crossroad. You should have heard her raven when I told her I was off to the States. You'd best be stopping here, she says, where you got a bit of land. And nothing else, says I. You'll not be going, she says, croaking like a beldame and shaking her bony finger at me. Faith, and I will, says I, and this very morning, too. And with that, I put on me shoes and started for the door.
And here you are.
And here I am. And tomorrow I'll be aboard a boat bound for America.
And the old woman mourning you're going.
She's that noodle-headed, she believes I'll come to a bad end. Me, Michael Brady, the strongest lad in Kinsale. Remember, she shouts, hobbling after me on her bad leg. Remember, there's never a Brady left the old sod yet in Foster. I warn you, she says, fate'll not treat you kindly. For why should Michael Brady be asking odds of anything or anybody with his two strong hands and his great brain, says I. What's fate but a piddling word fit only for crones and zanies? Fate.
Well, I'll say this for you. It's not too modest, Jar, about your own might.
And why should I be, I'm asking? What did I ever get that I didn't earn by my own hard work and my own scheming? And it's coming back one day I'll be to shame the old woman with a fine warm fur coat and me pockets full of gold. So why I'm telling you all this, I wouldn't be knowing.
That thing about the Bradys, is it true what your granny said?
It's true they had misfortune. But it was their own lack of guts let him be pushed about, and no other thing whatever. But don't think I'm like them. Hey, look. That's a house yonder. And shelter, maybe.
That is a tumble-down place, and no shelter at all.
We'll serve to keep off the rain. Let us be going into it.
Stop. I know that place, Michael, and I'm not going into it.
Wouldn't sleep in the rain, surely.
That I would. Many's the time I've passed this way, and many's the queer tale I've heard tell of the goings-on in that old house.
Goings-on?
Strange, dark things. Unnatural. It's haunted, Michael.
Haunted? Is it ghosts you'll be fearing?
Shh, don't speak a name like that, and we're so near to the house.
It's daft you are entirely, I'm thinking, to believe such foolishness. You sound like an old granny and her talking of banshees.
Ah, it's a strong, brave lad, Giles. But don't be telling me that there's no such thing.
I'll not only tell you, I'll prove it to you. For it's in there I'm going to get out of the rain. And it's to sleep I'm going.
Don't do it, lad, brave as you are.
Ah, the back of me hand to him. I'm not afraid of him.
In heaven protect him. I'll be sleeping under the oak tree yonder.
When the rain's trickling down your neck, you can think of me snug and dry. Good night to you.
The saints preserve you.
I'll save you a small ghost if I catch one. John! John, your friends, the ghosts, left the door open for me. Tis kind they are. Though it's about to fall from its hinges.
Tis tempting fate you are, lad.
I'll be laying right down here by the door. Pleasant dreams to you.
Haunted. The silly fool. Haunt in this day and age.
Imagine that.
I imagine.
Hey, who are you? Where are you?
I'm right here.
Right there you are. But where there is, I'd not be knowing. It being so dark. I'll light a match and just have a look at you.
It'll do you no good at all.
It'll take it. The matches are soaked with rain.
And you see, what dry as a bone, they do you no good. For you couldn't see me if you was to light the whole box of them.
Is it making insinuations against the power of my eyes, you are? For I'll have none of your lip.
I am not. But no one has ever seen me, nor will they ever. Yet I've always been here.
You've always been in this house, you mean?
I've always been everywhere.
Leave off your riddles, man. There's no one could always be everywhere. Impossible it is.
Not impossible for me. It's no trick at all.
No trick at all, isn't it?
Next you'll be telling me you're a ghost, and I don't believe in them.
If by ghost you mean something that has died and then come back to earth, I'm not one.
I've no mind to be playing guessing games here in the dark. You have a name, I suppose.
Yes, I have a name. But it's a most inadequate one, and much too casual sounding for one of my importance. They call me Time.
Time. Time talking. That's good, that is. Touched in the head, you must be. And what brings you here, Mr. Time?
I have a rendezvous with fate. I often help her with her work.
Oh, she's coming too.
Now, see here, man. It's crazy you are, to be sure, and for that I'm sorry for you. But I've no mind to be bandying words with you. So I'll thank you to stop talking and let me go to sleep.
Saints preserve us, that was a near one.
That's fate coming. And in a terrible pet she is, too, by the sound.
It's a clap of thunder only, call it what you will.
I hope she won't be wanting to wrestle with you.
Wrestle with me? Ha! That would be good now. Why should she want to do that?
Well, you see, my lad, fate is not always a lady. She gets violent at times, especially when she's cross. She loves to wrestle now and then. She's good at it, too. Knows some nasty hole she does. She has a trick of picking a man up when he least expects it and tossing him down in a way it's not pretty to see.
Ah, fate is only a word for poets and weaklings who have no strength of their own and need someone to lean on.
I warn you, young man, don't let her know you doubt her existence. She's a capricious jade, and quite vain she is. And if you don't humor her, it's likely to be fatal. You'll find her kinder if she's on your side.
It's clean daft, you are, I'm thinking.
And here I am, fine. Though to be sure, it is the wonder of the world that I made it at all, with all I'm having to tend to this day.
What's this now?
More trouble, Fate.
Trouble, you're asking? And didn't another war start this very morning?
Another one?
And there's nothing keeps me on the jump like a war. Patriot myself must be flying from one battle to another, taking a good push at one lad to see that he lands in front of the bullet I picked for him, and giving a jerk to another to keep him from getting struck down before his day. I say to your time, if he gets much worse, I'm going to need help and no mistake.
The madhouse, surely, and not hearted at all.
The matter with Lady Luck.
Lady Luck. It's all right, baby, for little things like picking out steak winners. But when it comes to a real job, fate has to take a hand.
There's a young man here.
You don't need to tell him that. Oh, really? I was expecting him.
Oh, you was expecting me, was you? When 'twas not myself, even knew I was coming in this shack until a minute before I crossed the threshold.
And you didn't feel the push of me will behind you?
I did not. It was the push of the rain down me neck and nothing more that brought me in.
And aren't you thinking it's a strange thing you found yourself outside this place with the rain coming down when you told me yourself you'd be in Dublin this night and sleeping in a soft bed?
What should be strange about that? Wasn't the bridge out? And wasn't the water rushing down at a speed to make swimming a danger to life and limb?
To be sure. But I'm not needing you to tell me the state of the bridge. When 'twas myself give the grand show that sent it sprawling, so you'd be here this minute.
Sure, you're taking great power unto yourself.
You mind the time your boat capsized and you 5 miles from the land?
I suppose you'll be telling me you was there that day, too.
I was, indeed. For a long time I've had my eyes on
you. And you'll recall how smart I was, grabbing a log with me two strong hands and paddling myself ashore with no help from anyone.
And I suppose it was your own self arranged to have the log close by, for never a word of thanks did I get for it.
And why should I be thanking you for it? It was only just now I was saying fate is nothing but a piddling word fit only for poets and weaklings. I'll have you know Michael Brady shapes his own fate.
Easy, lad. It don't pay to be talking up to fate and putting the lie on her.
Ah, 'tis that I must be talking to her at all. And me knowing she's nothing but an old wives' tale.
You'd be better if you kept a civil tongue in your head and called me no names. 'Tis your disbelieving, and you're thinking you're the great shining jewel of the world, and you're refusing to believe that I am a power to be reckoned with. Here's the reason you're here this minute.
'Tis the rain coming down and the bridge being out and my lingering a bit too long over a mug the while I was listening to a silly old fella talk. That's the reason for me being here. So you'll oblige me by taking no credit for yourself.
I'll oblige you, will I? Here in time. Him. Did I move around like he was a wee wooden thing in a game? You'll oblige me, he says. If he don't speak with more respectfulness in his tone, I'll oblige him with a backstroke of the mouth.
Is he now, Fate? A young lad he is, with maybe a thing or two to learn about you.
Aye, and was to teach him I had him in here this night. But he's long gone about thinking to himself his cock of the walk. And giving me no credit at all for what happens to him, whether it be good or bad.
It's credit you're looking for, is it? Then you'll be disappointed. For I give no credit for what I do to anyone but myself.
I was hoping when we come face to face, you'd maybe be a little reasonable. But I see now it is a stubborn, bragging lad you are. And it is certain I'll have to take a fall out of it.
No, don't be too hard on the lad, Fate. It is a common thing in men that they be taking credit to themselves. And they're not always deserving it.
I know well what you're talking about, Time. They all love to strut a bit, but this one is the worst. Putting on himself the glory for everything I do for him. Even denying me power when I know well enough I could snuff him out with the touch of my hand.
Oh-ho! And who is it that's bragging now? And what's stopping you from doing the snuffing this minute?
Is it defying me, you are?
Yes, you know, lad, she's nearing the end of her patience.
And it's the two of us without patience, and as tired of her I am, with her boasting and prating of how strong she is and threatening what terrible things she'll be doing to a man, and not doing anything at all.
That will be the end, man. Get ready.
Get ready for what? You can't scare me.
Brave words, but they'll do you no good. I'm coming for your fate.
Stop.
It's gone too far. I'll do it with
them. Oh, let the man alone. He's little weak. He can't even see you coming.
They never can, but they can see you, my friend.
Where are you? How can I fight you? There's nothing to see. Nothing for my fist to strike against. Nothing to get hold of. There's a coward's way of fighting. Not letting the man see you. Not giving me a chance to.
Now look what you've done with your scuffling. That was cruel of your fate. Cruel.
Sometimes I have to be cruel. It's part of my job.
But he seemed a harmless lad.
They're all harmless. Except for themselves.
And he was a brave one, too, defying us. That takes courage, I'm thinking. When they find him, they'll be seeing your hand in this and blaming you.
Don't be worrying too much about it, Time. They'll find an explanation for it that suits them. Something they can understand. Something that doesn't mystify them as I do.
Oh, if you could only be easier on them. A bit more gentle.
It's an old softy you are, Time. It's me they need to treat them rough. Toughen them up a mite. Shall we be moving on?
Yes, by all means. It's no pleasure to me at all gazing on your finished work. Let's go.
Michael, it's daylight. Glory be, but that is a great wind last night. Michael, say something. Michael, it's me, Sean.
Nothing to strike. Nothing to grapple with.
Praises, you're alive. Oh, it is a nasty blow on the head you have.
Ah, Sean. Sean, it's you.
It's a wonder it didn't kill you.
Aye. She might have killed me.
She? Well, the door might have fallen on top of you.
Maybe it's safer to have her on your side.
She? Her? What are you talking about?
Nothing. Nothing, don't mind me, Sean. I'm a bit dizzy, maybe.
Yeah, no wonder. Well, we'd better be getting on towards Dublin if you're able.
Sean, I'll not be going to Dublin with you.
No?
I'm thinking what you said about Ireland last night. It's a fair land, surely.
Aye, it is, Dad.
And I might not like it in the States.
Well, true, you mightn't.
I hear there do be some daft ones in America, too.
So, as you said.
And the climate might be bad for me.
Aye, it might be.
And I'm thinking me poor old granny'd be missing me day in and day out. The heart of Michael Brady couldn't permit that. So it's a great sacrifice I'm making.
That's noble of you indeed.
But if I was to go, Sean Feeney, if I was to go, I'd have the world in the palm of me hand in no time at all. And don't show me thinking different.
Ladies and gentlemen, I know you will agree with me that a finer dramatic performance has seldom been heard on the air. And I'd like you all to know that Bob Montgomery, besides playing the part of Michael Brady, also directed the entire production.
That's very nice of you, Bob. But what do you need to know of direction when you have magnificent troopers like Miss Risden, Mr. Kramer, and Mr. Kerrigan? May I take this opportunity to thank them all, and you, Meredith, for the grand musical score. Thank you very much.
And the umbrellas, and the umbrellas, too big today. Bring me your parasol. It may be small, it may be big. He repairs them all with what you call a thingamajigaroo. Pitter-patter-patter, pitter-patter-patter, it looks like rain. Let it pitter-patter, let it pitter-patter, don't you mind the rain. You'll mend your umbrella and go on your way, singing toodle-lumma-lumma, toodle-lay, toodle-lumma-lumma, toodle-lay, and the umbrella's too thick. And there is a light. He is never dull, and he's very good. He'll come and come. He mends anything, and he'll see. Oh,
stage over to you.
Thanks, Bob. Friends, tonight I'd like to take you back to an evening at the old Maxwell House in Nashville, Tennessee, over 50 years ago. There's a ball being given for a group of Southern belles. They're dressed in crinoline. There's soft light, a fragrance of jasmine in the air. And the orchestra is playing an old waltz. Joel Cheek stops by a table.
Good evening, Mr. Cheek. You see, I'm drinking your grand Maxwell House coffee, and it tastes simply delicious. And, Mr. Cheek, all my friends enjoy it tremendously.
Why, thanks, Mary Bell. I'm mighty glad to hear that. Especially so that so many more of our friends are enjoying my Maxwell House coffee.
And that was more than 50 years ago. Friends, ever since it was created by that master coffee blender, Joel Cheek, Maxwell House has made and held millions of friends. Yes, everyone who tried this grand coffee pronounced it perfect. And all through the years, we've never ceased our efforts to improve this famous coffee. We've never stopped trying to make Maxwell House the finest coffee you can possibly buy. Today, we believe it is just that. And so do thousands and thousands of others. For more people are buying Maxwell House coffee than ever before in its history. Now that's due, first of all, to the improvement in the world-famous Maxwell House blend. Today it's richer, more delicious, more downright satisfying than ever. And then, too, there's the amazing radiant roast process we've developed, which roasts each coffee bean evenly all the way through, and so brings out the true natural flavor of this superb new blend. So if you haven't tried Maxwell House lately, won't you order a pound tomorrow? You'll discover with your very first cup why the new Maxwell House brings so much pleasure to so many millions. You'll find out why, now more than ever, it's the time to make friends with Maxwell House.
Tonight in the concert hall, Meredith Wilson presents one of Richard Wagner's most popular compositions, the prelude to the third act of Lohengrin. That was beautiful, Meredith. And by the way, I'll see you at the housewarming on Saturday night.
You betcha, Bob.
I know you're going to enjoy it because we have a new game that's even better than the ones you play at your house.
Well, what's the game, Bob?
Knock Knock is forgotten. It's no longer the rage. Handies have no spot in this super streamlined age. There's a game called Silly Dilly that's keeping up with the times from city folks to hillbillies. They're making up dizzy rhymes. I hope I can remember the tune.
What's a silly dilly, you tell me, for a gypsy fortune teller on a spree? A gypsy fortune teller on a spree is a tipsy gypsy, yes siree. Fiddly-dee, what's a silly dilly, tell me do, for a pretty debutante at her debut? A pretty debutante, it's plain to see, is a snooty beauty, yes siree. See how free and breezy definitions flow. Education's easy. Let's see what else you know. Oh, what's silly dilly for a star who was Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Miss Lamar? The only one for Hetty, you'll agree, is a classy chassis. Yes, sirree. Fiddly-dee. What's a silly dilly, Mr. Hull? For the reason we drink Maxwell. Now, please don't be dull.
The reason we drink Maxwell? Let me see. Maxwell, Axwell. Yes, siree. Fiddly-dee.
What's a silly dilly, Gertrude Neeson? Or a very famous cowboy. Now, you tell me.
If you mean Gene Autry, that must be a stable fever. Yes, siree.
Gee, that's fun. I like it. Daddy, and it's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get it over quickly. Go on. Ask me one.
What's a silly dilly? Tell me, Daddy, for the man who always slaps you when I'm bad.
Well, look, from the description you just gave me, I'm a slappy pappy. Yes, sirree.
Here's a silly dilly, Frank, for you. Tell me one that fits a gal from the Burley Queue.
A gal from the Burley Queue? Let me see. She's a strippin', pippin'. Yes, sirree. Fiddly-dee.
All right, Mr. Wilson, you tell me. What's a broken piece of pudding?
Why, let me see. A broken piece of pudding? Can it be a busted custard?
Yes, sirree.
A fiddly-dee.
What's the silly dilly? Or adieu. The words we hate to say to all of you. But the time is growing near, and so we say,
99, we're on our way, Billy. Yes, sirree.
Ladies and gentlemen, next week, we're going to have another grand good news program for you that I know you won't want to miss. The special feature will be an informal preview of Wally Beery's great new picture, Sergeant Madden. We'll have Wally here in person with Alan Curtis. In addition to that, we will have with us the charming star of the Great Waltz, Melissa Gorgeous, and one of the most brilliant young tenors on the Metro lot, Gilbert Russell. In addition, the good news gang, Frank Morgan, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, and Meredith Wilson. In the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. Be sure to see Nelson Eddy in Let Freedom Ring. This is Bob Young saying good night.
This is Warren Hull saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.